All right, we got a good, maybe difficult conversation here today as we talk about, well, money and politics is part of it, but I'm not sure that, you know, that sums it all up here. I think we're talking about something that has been around a long time since Machiavelli wrote The Prince, right? And even though this wasn't stated in that book, this concept about the end justifies the means had come out of that Italian's writing. Oh, I should have looked at what century that was. You know, the morally questionable actions can be justified if they produce a sufficiently good or necessary outcome. What does it mean to you? I mean, I got some things here, and I'll talk about that as we get on to the program here today on Voices of Montana. But who defines the end? And then who pays the price for those types of things? There have been divisions in Montana's Republican Party, and that has led to gloves off during this primary season. We are talking with three candidates who have said that their records are being purposely misleading, or there are just actual falsehoods out there about them. We'll try to approach that today. Jennifer Carlson is with us, Valerie Moore, and Linda Rexton. Let's get into it today here on Voices of Montana. Here it is, right? And this is what we got going on today with Jennifer Carlson, Valerie Moore, Linda Rexton. We'll get right into it, but I want to just kind of lay this down a little bit about what is the end justifies the means. I think we see that in employed an awful lot in politics. And in some contexts, right, it's widely recognized that these outcomes were justifiable. One of them would be most notably, and I think it came onto a lot of our plates here, when America dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? We defended that, and some ethicists and historians on the ground that they hastened the end of the war and ultimately saved lives in that regard. But on the other hand, we also see those kinds of things wind up being severely abused. And I think the quarantines, the compulsory vaccinations, I think the censorship over the COVID pandemic, I think there's plenty of examples out there where they are abused. And I'm gonna point to look at what President Obama and Hillary Clinton have justified. When it started with the Steele dossier, and they knew it was wrong, and they were told by their DOJ and the FBI that there's nothing true about this, but they went forward with it because their end justified the means, right? The question there, too, is who defines what that is? And then who pays the price? Who bears the cost? That is kind of a little bit of the background underneath everything that comes out messaging-wise in today's campaigns, in today's world. It's, you know, we hear that they call it a blood sport. Well, I'm going to pull back on that. I think it's a contact sport, that's for sure, but it doesn't have to be a blood sport. And this is up to us. This is up to you to become an informed voter and then use that information. Some of it may be misinformation. That's the process of you informing yourself correctly about it. We're going to talk with three candidates who have been, they claim, unfairly attacked, fell out of favor with their party, and now the party has picked other candidates over them. And then there are groups out there that are, as they are still running in this primary, right? It's a primary election. There are groups out there that have attacked them. And some have gone overboard in my mind. And one, in fact, has caused a complaint with our Office of Political Practices. So let's welcome our candidates here and get into this conversation. It's 866-627-5483 or text a message 781-627-5483 as usual. Three to introduce here. Let's start with Jennifer Carlson from Churchill, Montana, candidate for House District 68. Jennifer, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate that. And I know it's hard. It's difficult because it's personal. It's also political in nature. So thank you for, you know, addressing these things here. Valerie Moore from Plentywood, Montana, my old hometown, House District 29 candidate, current sitting a Republican as well. Good morning, Valerie. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, Tom. I'm doing very well, and I certainly appreciate you having us on this morning and telling our side of the story.
Yeah, great. And great for, thanks for being here. And then House District 13, current representative there is Linda Rexton out of Polson, Montana, and also running for re-election here. Good morning, Linda. I keep asking how are things, but you're in the middle of a hot election, aren't you?
Yes, it's been very hot. And actually very slanted.
Well, and you know, and that's why we're here, right? You guys want to push back on what you feel are misleading. And I see some of these things from ASG in particular. That's Accountability in State Government. We'll get into that. That's an organization. You can go to the website there as well. It's run by a former legislator, Dan Bartel. I reached out to him. I've not heard from him regarding this. I did speak with a member of Republican leadership over this, and I did speak with associate with Americans for Prosperity as well. These are part of the table setting for us here today. So spoke mostly on background and off the record at times with those folks. Jennifer, tell your story, all right? Because I think as it's been published in a couple of publications, you know, this one, I think it really stands out because of what you had told those publications. They're getting these mailers, friends of yours, churchgoers, are getting these mailers and they look convincing, right? And so after having known you for I don't know how many years, they still come up and they would say, why are you wearing a she, her pin? Something to that effect. Tell that story, Jennifer.
Well, yeah, Tom, that mailer came as an absolute shock. Actually, I will tell you a little bit of background before that mailer because
go ahead.
Dan Bartel was a friend of mine and, as you probably know, was one of the founding members of the Montana Freedom Caucus. I served with him for two sessions and I considered him to be a friend. So when I got a mailer from him to my district supporting my opponent, I sent him a text and I said, wow, I was surprised, that, you know, with friends like this, who needs enemies is what I said. And then a week later, I get a mailer that has digitally altered pictures of myself, which is my campaign photo and a picture from my probably posted on my Facebook, which is when I was signing my filing last election cycle. So those pictures were both digitally altered to have me holding a pride flag and wearing a pronoun button. And that was bad enough, honestly. But the shocking part was saying that because I voted for the Coal Trust Endowment Cultural Arts Grant, that I was somehow hosting LGBTQ plus movie night or whatever it said at a theater in Missoula. And people are like, wait, what is this? I got so many texts. I was actually out knocking on doors while other people were getting their mail. And they were texting me and calling me saying, what's going on? Why are they showing you with a pride flag? Did you actually vote for this? Whatever. And I'm like, no, none of that is true. Like literally none of that is true. Dan Bartel voted for that bill.
Wait, say that again. I mean, let's not roll over that point because I find that ironic in the fact that the person who is behind those mailings about this vote was also voted for that same arts and cultural funding. Incredible.
Oh, yes. There is no end to the irony in Accountability for State Government holding themselves to no accountability and their founder having voted for the exact same thing, sending out an illegal mailer against me. And the reason I say it's illegal, Tom, is because unfortunately it wouldn't have been illegal to say all those lies, except for he digitally altered my photo, which the legislature in 2025 passed a new law that says you cannot digitally alter a person's photo to make something false look true within 60 days of an election, unless you put a disclaimer on it. So think about that. It's still not even illegal to alter my photo to make something false look true and lie about me if you put a disclaimer on it. Why can't we just tell the truth? Why are Republicans so okay with lying?
Yeah.
I don't think they all are. But this is why, you know, we're talking about it, and this is why we have recourse in that regard. What was your reaction, Jennifer? And then Linda and Valerie, stand by too, because I want to hear your story. But what was your reaction then, Jennifer, when you know, longtime associates came up to you, and you obviously saw the impact of that misleading campaign?
Oh, I did. And honestly, Tom, I would say that, I'll tell you a funny story because I kind of lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah, why not?
I was pretty upset when I saw that mailer. I was in my kitchen. I was pretty upset about it. I thought, wow, this is like getting stabbed in the back and the front at the same time. And then my husband walked in for lunch, and he saw the mailer, and he busted out laughing, and he goes, oh, my God, that is so absolutely ridiculous. No one's going to believe it. And I said, that might be true about the people who've known me for 20 years, but how about the people in the new part of my district, right, who don't know me? They haven't known me. And so when I went to the bank to actually notarize the complaint, which I did file a complaint with COPP, the gal who I've obviously known forever at my bank said, I'm so glad you came in here to talk to or to do this. And so that we had a chance to talk about it, because if I was a regular voter and this is a lady with my sign in her yard, said I would be inclined to take my sign down because this is not who you have always told us you are. And, as you know, Tom, I've been on your show before when House Bill 702 passed. I'm a transparent person almost to a fault, and I don't lie. And so people really were shocked. I had texts from ladies at church. Why are you wearing a pronoun button? You're like, well, it must be partly true because obviously you're wearing a pronoun button. So, I mean, something. And you know, normally, in the course of events up to this point in our life, Tom, when you get an attack mailer, there's almost always like this tiny general kernel that could be construed as true, and it's been extrapolated and expanded. But this, there is nothing that goes back to, oh, well, there was something that might actually be true. Nothing about these attacks on any of us had one bit of truth to them. None. There's not something in the Coal Trust Endowment Program that's funding any of this. But if a theater got a grant, and then 2 years later, they hosted an event that Dan Bartel didn't like, well, I think I woke up in America still, where we have freedom of speech, right? And so I just look at it and I said, there isn't one redeeming thing. There's not one true thing. Nothing about this has any merit, but it doesn't matter because the damage is done.
Have you ever seen this before against you?
I have never seen this.
Well, thank you. Valerie Moore, again, Representative Valerie Moore, out of Plentywood, House District 29, a candidate again. And thank you guys for, you know, running, throwing your hat in the ring. As we know here, it can be difficult and personal to get through. Valerie, what's your experience? What is out there that has caused you to want to be, you know, to be concerned about it?
Well, I think my first notice was in January. My first mailer went out against me in January, and I thought, wow, last session, you know, I didn't even file until 2 weeks before the deadline. And, you know, it wasn't pleasant, but it was nothing like this. But when it started in January, I thought, wow, I think this is not going to be good. So I've had probably a dozen mailers out against me. I have been on social media across the whole state, ironically. I've gotten calls from Missoula and Bozeman, people completely out of my district calling me on the mailers. And it is, commercials now have started showing up on television and as I said, on social media. But to the extent that my six-year-old granddaughter watches kids' YouTube because she loves the animal and bird shows and all the fun stuff, and there's commercials against me. Now, when my six-year-old granddaughter comes to me crying because they are saying her grandma is putting children in danger, and she says, Grandma, you're nice. You would never hurt children. And she's crying. It's went too far. And it's just, It's just, I've never seen anything or expected anything like this. And we all know politics is politics, and we see it on the federal level all the time. But to bring out of state money to Montana to attack us and our integrity, and it's all lies, and we all know that our friends don't believe it. But after you are inundated with this over and over and over, like Jennifer said, it starts to become a kernel of doubt there somewhere, or maybe there's some of this is true. So it's hard to even be out and do our job as legislators, because I have a full plate just doing the job that I want to do for my constituents, which is be the voice in Helena. When I'm continually defending myself, have to be out there defend myself against these lies. So my job is to be the conservative voice in Helena for my constituents. That's what I do. That's what I want to do. And that's the most important thing to me. But this is a full-time job, just trying to defend yourself against lies.
Yeah, and it is discouraging. And, you know, and we make it part of the game, we call it. And I think that has gone too far. You know, mm-hmm. like you said, it's your six-year-old granddaughter. And it's no right. game. It's no yeah. game at that point.
No, there isn't. And how do you explain to a six-year-old that there are bad people in the world that tell lies and it's not true? And, you know, it's just it's a hard game to explain to a six-year-old when, there's no part of it that's good, and there's no part of it for her to understand other than it's not true. And, you know, and she knows that. So, but it's just going back to continual lies that you're defending yourself over when all you want to do is represent your people. You want to represent your constituents, not this out-of-state Washington, D.C. and Virginia-based PACs that they don't care what happens to my corner of the world or any part of Montana. But they certainly don't care about extreme northeast Montana and what's good for us.
I'm a small business owner, manager up there for quite some time. And this was your first legislative session, this last session, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yep. Again, that's the Representative Valerie Moore. Let's also, I know I'm way behind the need for a break here, and Cody's making a funny face. And we'll take that probably at about 9:30, Cody, just because I want to, we need to hear from Linda Rexton again. House District 13, that's out of the Polson area. Linda, you know, how long have you been a representative?
For three terms, I've been a representative in the House. I would have to say that I concur with my colleagues, you know, that I've always stood by children. You know, I've been in education on the Education Committee now for three terms and was chair of House Education. I've never voted for any kind of transgender anything in the legislature. And to have that in that flyer insult me as though I am some sort of pervert, misusing children, is just ridiculous. And it's very insulting. And if I just want to go back about, they all reference these terrible flyers on House Bill 9. If you look at the text of House Bill 9, there's nothing in there about transgender. Mm-hmm. Those are grants that are vetted by committee. And the committee has a responsibility to vet those grants. So if there's something nefarious in those grants, then it should have been struck down in that committee. So it's a real big stretch to try and indict us as though we are terrible people. And I've had two signs taken down, and going door to door. I had a really nice conversation with a gentleman here up in Hillcrest, the area of Polson. And, and I noticed that Finley came to his door and told him a bunch of lies. That's my opponent. and took the sign down. And I came up and asked him what was going on. And he said, well, you voted for all kinds of transgender stuff. I said, no, I did not. Well, he said, I just don't like your voting record. And so he took my sign down, put my opponent's sign up. And this has been happening now in this area. So the people that have even a thought that you're doing something bad are believing this. And that's very concerning to me because I've never given any indication that I've done any of this. So and you've got to look at what is the agenda behind this. They want their agenda passed, and we stand in the way.
Well, don't you agree with a lot of their agenda? Don't you agree with a lot of their agenda? And what would you say is like their agenda? I mean, that's another question. Look at
their idea. Well, I'll give you a good example. Americans for Prosperity, they don't like Medicaid. They don't like the fact that I voted to support our rural hospitals. They don't like Social Security. They want to get rid of that. If you look on the Virginia website, you're going to see that.
I think a lot.
And,
go ahead.
They don't like the fact that you support your constituents. They don't like that. They want you to vote in lockstep with what they want to pass, period.
All right. Had a chance to push back against some of the negative campaign flyers that they feel very misleading, outright lies. Jennifer Carlson, Valerie Moore, Linda Rexton is with us here. They are all candidates, Valerie and Linda, current sitting Republicans on the state legislature. Jennifer Carlson, former legislator, running for House District 68. Jennifer, I got like a minute and a half here, and I want to have you comment, as we heard from Valerie and Linda, similar stories. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, Tom, I heard what Linda just said before the break, and I wanted to actually share my thoughts on that, which is, at least in my case, I believe that the attacks on me were instigated by my steadfast support of the homestead property tax exemption. As you probably know, and I've done a ton of research on it, in 2026 tax year, every home in Montana under $4 million value will see a tax rate cut if the home is occupied. And that is something like 99.5% of all homes in Montana, if they're occupied, will have a tax rate cut. Obviously, there's other steps involved there. But when I wrote an article explaining that to my district, which you would probably consider the affordable living part of Gallatin County, I received a text from a prominent member of Republican Party legislature that warned me I would be attacked in the primary. And sure enough, I was expecting it. I was not expecting this.
All right, it is still philosophical in nature here, too. Who defines what a party identity is, how big or how small that identity is? Is bipartisanship, what does that mean nowadays? Is it a strength or is it a liability at times? And, you know, and there is a right to demand accountability with our candidates in what they're saying and what they're doing. But we see an awful lot today. Welcome back here to Voices of Montana. We have three candidates on the line here who have claimed that they are being unfairly targeted, misrepresentative, outspent, unfairly labeled as well. And there's one group that's really leading the charge in that. Jennifer Carlson has filed a complaint with the Commissioner of Political Practices regarding ASG, Accountability in State Government, which I think I've seen those flyers. I think they're very misleading. They have used AI-generated pictures without attribution to AI, and that's illegal too. So that's to be decided. And like I mentioned too, I have spoken recently with a member of the GOP leadership, and they they're standing their ground on, you know, they have a right to and a duty, as a matter of fact, to defend that label. You know, what does it mean to be a Republican? Americans for Prosperity, a group that I have identified with in terms of their policy. I don't know that I'm a huge fan of Medicaid, and I don't think Social Security. I mean, you know, we're kicking that can down the road. It is about money in government, but all the money that's being spent nowadays in Montana is out of state money. And almost all of it, right? It used to be where candidates would run a race and, you know, it would, maybe they'd get $3,000, $5,000. But now you look at spending in Montana, there was one group that dropped a TV, campaign against a candidate, a Republican candidate, that was like $80,000 or more. This is where we're at right now. And we have these things that maybe it takes too much time to talk about, but negative campaigning, smear campaigns, defining your opponent, fear-based messaging, identity targeting, media manipulation, third-party attack channels, they're all a part of today's modern era campaign strategy. Unfortunately, they're a part of it. And why? Because we fall prey to it. It works, as we're hearing from Jennifer Carlson and Valerie Moore, Linda Rexton. People have responded to those negative campaigns, people they have known quite some time. And it's moving the needle. And that's the thing about negative campaigning ads. So that's a little bit of the background. Let's get back into the story here again. And we did hear from Jennifer Carlson going into the break. And Valerie Moore, I want to hear from you. And thank you again for coming on. I appreciate that. Out of Plentywood, House District 29, current representative seeking her second term there in that district. I have watched and reported on the legislature the past two sessions. And so I know that these things are lies. Because a guy I think about is Colonel David Beatty, right? Army veteran, educator as well. There is no way that I can believe that David Beatty is out there supporting, you know, the Pride campaign. And so those right. things don't resonate, right? You know, talk about who have you talked to? Have you talked to party members? What has that conversation been like? Are they asking you, you know, well, if you vote this way, if you vote that way? Jennifer had said property taxes was the crux of all of this. And you probably agree with that.
Tom, I do agree with that. I think that's where it's all stemming from, because, you know, the backers that we're hearing for Americans for Prosperities are big landowners and own a lot of stuff in Montana. And so they don't like the idea of the property tax bills we passed. But as Jennifer said, this helped over 90% of Montanans, particularly in Northeast Montana, my district. And I go back to the word that you said, accountability. Well, who are we accountable to? We're accountable to our constituents, our voters mm-hmm. in Northeast Montana. I ran on the platform that Northeast Montana, and now I say extreme Northeast Montana, since Billings has decided to join Eastern Montana. I always tell people I'm from extreme Northeast Montana. We need a voice, and they did not have a voice. So I went there as a conservative voice, as a conservative Republican voice, to go to Helena and represent my constituents. So that's who I'm accountable to first. Yes, we are conservative Republicans, but our constituents come first because they need a voice. And it's not always the same as the state party. As we talk about trying to save rural health and keeping our hospitals viable, we're 350 miles from a major hospital. So it's very important. We have a very elderly population in our area who want to be able to live here. But if we don't have viable hospitals, it's not sustainable. We can't live here. Our people can't live here. So that's, you know, that was an important issue, but it wasn't for the state party.
But so what about, let me ask the follow-up question there about, are you a true conservative? Because, you know, they would claim that our government is taking control, and Medicaid is a fine example of that. I think it's $2 billion a year. You know, okay, it doesn't matter if it's coming from the federal government. It's still taxpayer money. And you know, a conservative principle is smaller government, right? So how do you vote, for larger government and then come back and say, well, I'm a conservative Republican?
Well, I think it goes back to how our healthcare system is now. I mean, our healthcare system is out of control on all levels. We know that. So we have to have hospitals here. We have to have rural hospitals here. And we're talking Medicaid expansion now rather than Medicaid, which is a different program. It's the federal government's portion is much larger. It's 90% federal government, 10% state. And I realize it's still government. But the way healthcare is right now, what's the answer until the whole system is revamped? And when's that? That's not going to happen. So we are going to take care of our own. If our people don't have insurance, we have to take care of them. They're our neighbors. They're the one that wait on us at the restaurant or do our hair or work on the farm or if they get hurt, they have to be taken care of. If we don't have some kind of subsidy to help, our hospitals are going to go under. Our hospitals all work under very small margins. I visited every hospital in my district and beyond to even Sydney, because a lot of our constituents doctor in Sydney. It was such an important thing if this sunsetted that they needed it. And they're not putting in the big fountains and the big foyers and all the things. They're just trying to stay afloat. So that, I mean, I don't know until healthcare gets a new vision, something happens and crashes and we start over. I don't know how we keep it without supporting programs like Medicaid expansion. So we put the parameters on it. We put, the community service, the having to work, even childcare qualifies. So we put some sideboards on it. But at this point, I don't have another answer for that. So I felt strongly that to keep our hospitals, which is very important to my constituents, whether they're conservative or not, that we have to keep our hospitals going.
Yeah, there was strong there was strong support from Republicans who, the governor's office for that matter, and that's why we talk about this division here. Linda Rexton is also with us. And Linda, I want to have you, talk more about it as well. What are your Republican chops, so to speak? And have you talked with party members? Have you gone to the local central committee? Are you working within the GOP grassroots level? Because I think that's a very important question that defines whether you're real or not. That was for you, Linda. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have attempted to work with the local Republican Party.
That's fair.
I have not changed in terms of my stance as a conservative Republican for three terms. Basically, I feel very strongly that that we need to be involved in our communities to understand what the issues are. And so I'm pretty active with our county commissioners, our city council, and various, like the chamber and other entities to try and make our community better. What I found happening in our local committee is that basically they have kind of diverged themselves from actually being involved in what's happening locally. I typically have gone to those committees and reinstated that I serve our locale. I have to, in my area, you have to listen to everybody because you serve. Right now, I have about 60% Republican in my area and 40% Democrat in my area. You have to listen to everybody because you represent everybody. And there are some issues that my constituents have that they let me know, for instance, to support our rural hospitals in our area. I met with both hospital administrators, and I understood the nature of what was at stake. For instance, at St. Joseph Medical Center here, they take everybody. And I saw personally a lot of people coming into the emergency room with no health care insurance. And that was driving up cost. And their margin is very, very small at St. Joe's because they take everybody because they're part of the Sisters of Charity. Mm-hmm. So, and it wasn't really Medicaid expansion. Nothing was expanded. It was called Medicaid renewal, because everybody had to renew, and there are work requirements. And basically, when we heard it, the bill on the floor, the average time for people on Medicaid, if they're able-bodied to and able to work, was about a year and a half, because then they were working, then they got health insurance. And it's a whole lot better to have people going through the walk-in clinic than the emergency room and driving up those costs. So I heard that loud and clear. And I went into the session knowing that we were going to have to do something to support our rural hospitals. And how many people want to drive 50, 100, and as Valerie said, 350 miles for primary care? I mean, this is ridiculous. We've got to look, you know, put our arms around a problem like that and come up with at least a solution that works for now.
Well, Linda,
maybe there are other things that
I'm going to pull it back here because I got to save a little bit of time here. But I know that something had to be done, but I think the GOP was saying you didn't even consider some of our proposals because the Medicaid thing was all baked in by everybody. And I felt the same way. I felt, how do we know that we can't do something else? If you know, this was the wave there. I get all that. I mean, politics is not a
black and white thing. You know, I don't buy the argument that it was baked in. I do not buy that argument.
I completely do. I mean, and I watched this. I watched the sessions. Yeah. Jennifer Carlson, you guys, thank you guys for throwing your hat in the ring for your public service. You got any final thoughts here? Maybe, a little bit about your GOP chops.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks for having us. I just wanted to follow up on that because I don't want anyone to be confused. I am not being attacked because of Medicaid because I wasn't there last session. So I just want to remind everybody, I have a consistent 100% score with the Montana Family Foundation. I have a 91% score with the CPAC, which is high for the American Conservative Union. I'm endorsed by Montana Shooting Sports. I have a Mental Health Hero Award from Nami, Montana. I was Americans for Prosperity Torchbearer Award, my second session. The A-plus rating from NRA, Champion of Business from the Montana Chamber of Commerce. So this is not because I am not conservative. I have racked my brains, and what it's about, in my opinion, is my support of the property tax cut that some people are on the record opposing, including suing the state to have that overturned.
There's a lot of layers to this, and it's hard to cover them all. And so thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate that. We didn't touch on many of the things that we wanted to, but this continues. And again, big thanks to you guys for your public service and throwing your hat in the ring, and good luck. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.